Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by Core Sports, the very best in women's active wear, head sweats, function smart physical therapy, and our buddy Gino Cinco. And of course, you can check out any of our interviews on iTunes on Babbittville Radio. Our next guest, four-time Olympian, has won a bronze medal, silver medal in the Olympics, and one of the greatest middle distance runners in history, Mr. Bernard Lagat. Bernard, how are you?
I am good. Thank you so much for calling me, Bob. Nice chatting with you again.
Always a pleasure, Bernard. So, Bernard, for our folks who don't know a lot about Bernard Lagat, I'm going to go back in time a little bit. Talk about growing up in Kenya. Were you an athlete growing up, and what type of what type of city did you grow up in?
You know, I grew up in a large family, and I grew up really in a family that, you know, they were doing sport. You know, it was about soccer here and there for my older siblings, and then my older sister was a runner. So I grew up in a family that knew a little bit about the sport, but the running was the one that came out naturally for us. So we were running, and everywhere we could run to school, to groceries, and all that stuff. And, you know, like, we were like a small town folks, you know, back home. So we were not like from a big city or anything like that. So a community that knows a lot about each other and all that stuff. So it was pretty good, you know, area that I grew up in.
So, and then when you went to high school, did you run in high school?
Oh, even before that, I ran in primary school as well.
Okay.
Because a lot of young guys, you know, like myself when I was growing up, you know, everything was about soccer and running. So I realized way long time ago, even earlier on, that I wasn't good in soccer. So I decided to run. And because my sister was a runner, so I decided to take it and just keep running. So until I went to high school is when I actually decided to take it seriously, because my sister then was telling me, you know what, hey, you can run fast and you can earn a scholarship to go to America. Then that kind of thing stuck on my mind, and I decided to chase it as my dream, and, you know, got me to Washington State.
Well, and before that, you were at, what, the Jomo Kenyatta University of Agriculture and Technology. So is that what you thought your profession would be, that you'd be involved with agriculture?
No. In fact, I wanted something to do with computers, and because, you know, for me, I didn't know anything about computers, but the thought of using a computer for the first time was something that was cool. And I thought, when I am done with high school, I would like to go to America, or wherever I go, even a small college in Kenya, if I can make it to America, was to study computers, even though I had never, ever taken one computer lesson at all. Even I graduated in high school without even touching a keyboard. But
really?
I had this thing of, you know, this is interesting, you know. People talk about Microsoft, people talk about all these things, computer. There's some high schools in Kenya that were using computers from, like, 90s and everything, but us in the village, we never did anything like that. So I thought I would go to Jomo Kenyatta. Then when I got good grades, and I went to Jomo Kenyatta, and I decided to take, you know, science. And one of them was, I was doing prerequisites for computer science before I was able to come to the United States.
And did you know about that Henry Rono had run at Washington State, the famous, obviously, great Kenyan runner? Was that one of the reasons you ended up there?
You know, I was able to find it after high school when I joined Jomo Kenyatta University of Agriculture and Technology, because my coach then was a great coach. Ngangangata over there was a good coach that told me a lot about Washington State, told me about Henry Rono, and then I even got to learn, okay, so this Henry Rono, I heard the name, but I didn't even know he went to Washington State. I didn't even know where he lived. But it was a good thing that, you know, I decided to come to Washington State because of the history. That actually in itself made me want to, you know, I wanted myself to be associated with a school like that, and I decided I would go to Washington State.
How hard was that, coming from Kenya and coming to the United States, and I'm assuming you knew a little English when you came over, but how tough was that for you to adapt to America?
You know, the thing is, the thing about English was not a problem, because, you know, we studied from, you know, all the way in primary school, in high school,
yeah.
There was nothing else, you know, English was, you know, the only language they used in teaching. And so I learned English. I went to university there. English was not a problem. But the thing is that for me, it was not an easy thing. I mean, it wasn't hard to leave Kenya because I had already built this thing in my mind. You know, even when I was at Jomo Kenyatta, my friend Eric, who ended up becoming my roommate at Washington State, had already left Kenya to come to Washington State University. So I had already built these hopes, you know, saying that, you know what, I would like to go to, I would like to really go to United States. So when my I-20 came, I decided this is exactly what I wanted to do. I'm going to go in there. Even I, you know, my dad told me, okay, I can do whatever I can to get your ticket to go there.
Yeah.
Get your scholarship, I'll get you your ticket. And he sold 2 acres of land, and I was able to buy a one-way ticket.
So you also you got yourself a one-way ticket.
And yes.
That's pretty scary. You either have to make it or you're not coming home.
Yeah, you know, but my dad had faith in me. He said, no, I know you will come back.
That is wild. So he sold some land?
Yeah, he sold 2 acres of, you know, he had 28 acres.
Yeah.
So he decided to sell two.
To get you to Washington.
Yep, those 2 acres brought me all the way to Pullman.
I love that. And did you? So while you were there, you win 3 NCAA championships in indoor mile, the 3,000, the 5,000 outdoors. Did you adapt to Washington and Pullman pretty quickly?
Oh, very quickly. Especially that Washington State actually looked like Kenya, except we didn't have a lot of wheat like they used to have.
Right.
I mean, they had it up there. But the environment was the same. You know, it looked so local to me. You know, Washington State was a university. Pullman, you could just walk from one street to another. I mean, one, like in less than a month, you already finished the whole city.
Right.
So that was Kapsabe to me, where I grew up. So I was like, this is exactly where I belong. You know, where else could I find a place that resembles back home? You know, a little bit out of the university were dirt roads. I grew up in those. You know, that we didn't have any tarmac roads.
I love
so
that.
Those were things that made me love Washington State. Seeing the farmers and, you know, all these big old trucks carrying wheat. That was, I felt like I was home. And plus, the university was great. I had really awesome professors in management information systems, which I studied, and they supported me all the way, you know, going above and beyond, you know, to make sure that I get all the homework that I sometimes we miss when we go for long trips.
So your first Olympic experience is Sydney in 2000, representing Kenya.
Yes.
And at the time, Hikmel Garouche is the best, right? He's unbeatable, right? Invincible.
Yes.
He's the favorite. And you and Noah Nagani pretty much teamed up on him and did a right? Was that the plan?
Let me tell you, every single time we were in that Olympic Village,
yes,
we were talking about strategies. I remember we had a meeting the day before, and we were telling ourselves, you know what? I think this Hikmel Garouche is vulnerable. Because, you know, you could tell that he was almost every time he was, you know, he wasn't himself. He was almost like having this, I don't know what you call it, like almost like anxiety or
yes.
He was nervous.
He was but nervous because so much pressure.
But you know what, though, we end up, I mean, realizing later it was, the guy was under enormous pressure.
Yes.
But for us, the Kenyans, the two of us, we thought, okay, you know what, we've been coming second or third to this guy all this time, you know what? Let's try our best. Maybe we can beat him. And, you know, Noah was the guy who, we told him, or everybody was saying, okay, just follow him. You know, with the pacemakers, we know they're going to have a pacemaker here, a Moroccan, of course, if he makes the finals. And you know what? We'll just hang behind him and just go all out and, you know, try to beat him. And Noah stuck to that plan, and I was just right behind him, and we made history, you know, beating El Garouche in Olympic Games, and me coming third in my first attempt at the Olympics. That was, to me, you know, I was super, super excited about that.
Well, and you ended up the year ranked number three in the world at 1,500. So obviously
right.
At that point, everybody's taking notice of Bernard Lagat. Did that change? Did all of a sudden that notoriety coming away with a bronze medal, did it change the way people, you know, treated you back in Kenya or in Washington?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, people kind of got to know me even more. And then with winning Olympic medal for the first time, and I had lived in America, so I had a lot of fans in America, and back home I had a lot of fans.
Yes.
And so that alone in itself, that, I mean, gave me this, like, amazing avenue. You know, most of the journalists in America were writing about me, and then some also in Kenya were writing about me. So I got really, in fact, if anything, the media really helped me a lot, when I make that breakthrough in 2000 Olympics. So then when it came down to the following Olympics, I had a lot of pressure and responsibility because now Noah had retired, and so it was my turn to see if I can beat Elgin Rouge. So it was really something that really, that 2000 Olympics helped me a lot in terms of my future from there on.
Well, and if you look at it, in 2001, you finished second to Elgin Rouge at the Worlds.
Yes,
and then in Brussels, you set the Kenyan national record, second fastest ever, and Garouche is still in front of you.
Exactly. And that's why this guy was almost invincible.
Yes. Now, could you be friends with him, or was it the type of thing? You were friends with him.
Oh, yeah, I was friends with him. But then once we started, you know, I would say we were friends until the day before any race, or the day before semifinals, or, you know, quarterfinals, or the finals. Then on the day of the race, you know, every man on himself. You know, I know you as the greatest friend, you know, the greatest competitor, Israel Melgarouche, and you know what? On this day, today, that we are raising tonight, I don't know you. I'm going to run to beat you. Seriously. So it was one of those things that I was telling myself, you know, I want to make sure I beat this guy. You know, respect aside, but I want to give my A game.
Right.
And I tried so many times, but actually it ended up being only one chance in my life that I was able to beat him.
Zurich.
And that was about 2 weeks, or I'll say 3 weeks before the 2004 Athens Olympics, when I beat him in Zurich.
Yes, you got him at the 1500, 327.40. And so that must have given
you everything there. I'm so happy to hear that.
That must have given you a lot of confidence going into Athens, knowing that you had just beaten him.
Right. And, you know, and I was thinking to myself two things. One, we are repeating what we might repeat.
Yes.
We might repeat exactly what we did in 2000 in Sydney.
Right.
So I kept telling myself, no, I'm not going to change anything. Go with that plan. Know that this guy is beatable. I've done it once in Zurich. And this is going to help me a lot now. Oh, because my confidence was way too high. In fact, going into the finals, I felt like this is it. This is the moment. And I'm not going to mess this moment up. I'm going to stick to the rules. And whoever wants to mess this race, I don't care. But I'm going to keep an eye on only one person. And that was Hisham Elgarouche.
Right. And so that race turns out to be a total classic, right? It comes down. I mean, I think you ran your last lap in 52 seconds and still got the silver.
And still got silver. And in fact, that last 800 meters was 146. 146 for a lot of people like myself is a personal best.
So
in fact, I ran almost my personal best the last two laps. So it was unbelievable.
And lost.
And lost to a great champion.
Exactly. So exactly. Well, that's when you lose a race like that, you can't. It's not like you can second guess and go, I could have done this or done that. You did everything right. You ran 146. You ran 52 seconds, and a guy was just better on the day.
Right. And you know what? Though, that's the kind of something that sinks in the following day. That you know what? I gave it all out. You know what else could I have asked? But at that moment, you were really close to winning. You just feel like, what did I do wrong? You know, you're quick to kind of look at yourself in a different perspective. You're like, what did I do this and this wrong from basically that 100 when I was, or 80 yards before the finish line, when I was ahead of Hisham Elgarouche? What did I do wrong that he came to pass me about 15 meters to go? And that lingers for about a day. But then at the end, you're like, you know what? I lost to this great champion.
Yes.
And I gave it all out. There's nothing else I can ask myself.
Well, and you ended up the year ranked number one in the world. So obviously you were doing something right. When did you make the decision that you wanted to become an American citizen, run for the U.S.?
I made that decision in 2003.
Oh, okay.
And that, yes, I made, like, one year before the Olympics, I made that decision that I wanted to be an American. I've been here, I had been in America since 96, and I became a green card holder in 98. My process went so quick. So, but then, you know, the process for the green card holders, the process of becoming a citizen takes a long time.
It does, yes.
So, you know, they tell you it takes about 18 months or so. So I started at the end of 2003 to apply, knowing that by 2005, everything should be done.
Yep.
Or at least end of 2004, I should be able to get those fingerprints and, you know, get the, fingerprints and all that stuff to make sure I get my citizenship. But I guess in Arizona, or I don't know if it was my luck, everything just came back. Like in 6 months, I was already like done. And so it kind of
sort of surprised you a little bit.
It surprised me because how quick it went. So I would have like, I wish I could have waited until like after 2004 to start.
Right.
Yes.
So when you look at after becoming an American, so in 2007, when you win the world champs in Osaka,
right,
at both the 1500 and the 5000, at that point, right, you're representing the U.S.
I'm representing the United States, you know, for the first time,
yeah,
in a major championships.
Right. So that must have been pretty special.
Oh, my goodness. It was the best. Because the thing is, I would have represented the United States in 2006.
Yes.
At the World Championships in Helsinki. I think it was Helsinki. But then I was, you know, the Kenya Federation did not release me,
right,
in order for me to do that.
Yes.
But then I said, oh, no, you know, problem. I've represented Kenya with dignity and respect, and I'm not holding any grudge on anybody.
Yes.
Because, you know what, they're protecting their other guys, too. And, you know, if they could do this, they could be giving releases left and right. But then at the same time, I was thinking, why me? But, hey, I said, my time will come. I was able to run at the USA Trials. And in 2007, I qualified for two events to go to World Championships. And when I was in Osaka, that is when my eligibility started, the day before my first run.
So that you sort of announced your presence as an American with authority.
Exactly. I mean, in fact, I was eligible the day before. You know, I started my first rounds in the 1500 meters.
Yeah.
So my presence was unbelievable. It was, I mean, I made that presence known because this is the time now I can compete for my country fully.
Right.
And there's nobody's going to hold me back. And I went with that mentality and I was able to get 2 goals.
And then in 08, you win the U.S. Olympic trials at 1500 and 5000. But you,
yes,
you knew you had some injuries. Did the injuries come after the trials or? Did you?
Yeah, the injuries came after the trials,
okay,
when I was training in Germany.
Yeah.
And that was a problem with my left Achilles.
So when, as a guy who's, you know, you've been on four Olympic teams, you're 40 years old, you're still running incredibly well. How have you changed the way you train to, how have you adapted to age?
You know, one thing that is important, Bob, you know, that I've already decided to do, and my coach has really helped me do this, is he knows when I should take it easy.
Right.
And so every time, you know, every day, I used to be like, every day is a quality day.
Right.
So even like coaches, go 6 minutes, go for 6 miles, take it easy. Go even like, you know, 6:30 pace a mile. At the end of the run, I'm coming home and I'm, you know, I'm looking at my watch. Gosh, that was an easy day. I ran 5:45, you know, per mile.
Right.
But nowadays, I listen to my body. I make sure that I train hard when I have to. If I'm to take it easy, I take it really easy. And one day in a week, that has been like that ever since I started my running, since 96, I take Sundays off. So Sundays are my days off so that I can recover to come and train again on Monday. So that I've been able to do that, and my body really responds so well with that kind of rest, taking it easy and also pushing hard when I have to.
Was it hard for you here as a Kenyan? You medaled in 2000 and in 2004. In 2008, the first time as an American, you go there, and I know obviously you're injured and you want to come,
yeah,
away with a medal. But you get to the semis and the 1500 and the finals and the 5000, but no medals. Was,
yeah,
that tough for you?
Oh, it was tough for me. You know, I think that is for the first time as a runner.
Yeah.
I was really disappointed that actually I was just thinking to myself, how am I going to stand still? That was my first time as a professional runner in any championship not getting into the podium.
Right. Yeah,
ever.
That's true. Yeah.
Yes. Because I had been in podium, whether indoors, outdoors, world championships, everything. But then 2008 was the problem. But the thing is, I knew I was really struggling. But I did not want to, but I wanted to give my best. You know, even running one race or two races was a risk in itself when I'm over there. I would have pulled away out of the 5,000, but I thought to myself, why do I have to do this? I'm going to run as hard as I can. It doesn't matter. This Achilles is a problem, but I'm going to keep trying. So it was really hard not to medal after doing so well over the years.
And then when you go into, did you think after 2008 that you had another Olympics in you, that you would be able at, you know, in your late 30s to get to London?
Yes. Yes, I did. And the way I was feeling also in my training and my competition, I was doing so well. In fact, I was able to run my personal best when I switched to 5,000 meters, 12:54, and then another year, 12:53.
Yep.
So I was almost, in that event itself, I was at my prime, which a lot of athletes have already almost retired because they can't do that at, 30-something years old. But for me, I just felt like in 2012, that was my time, too. And indeed I was until that race in the finals, in the 5,000 meters. I'm sure you know,
you know. You got fourth.
But I got fourth by a huge mistake that somebody else did. I got tripped as I came through the bend.
That's right.
I got tripped. And in fact, I had to, every time I look at that tape, and I get disappointed because why did it happen at that time when I'm about to basically go all out and kick and win a medal? For sure, in London, I would have done better than fourth place.
And was it, who did you collide with?
Oh, a Kenyan guy, tripped me from behind. But I guess he was switching lanes.
Yes.
And as he was switching lanes, drifting, he just went with my foot.
Oh,
and I lost control. I went all the way. And that was the problem. Because then that was the most disappointing. Now, I thought this is my Olympics to actually gain something, win a medal for the United States. Because
yes.
that was my second Olympics. And I am not medaling. I was four. That was the most painful one. In fact, number one, you won gold. You're super happy. Number two, you're okay. Well, I wish I had won gold. The third place is like, I just won the gold. I just won bronze.
Right.
This guy is over the moon. Number four, I did not win any medal. So that is the most disappointing position that you can finish. I mean, according to me, I don't know about anybody else, but to me, finishing fourth is the one that I think is. I think it's finishing sixth. I didn't have it today, but fourth, and knowing that somebody else tripped you,
yes,
that was hard to take.
Yeah, I bet it was. So in 2010, you break Eamon Coghlan's record, eighth win, Wanamaker Mile. Did you feel that you would be a good indoor runner? Because a lot of times, guys, outdoor track and indoor track are two different games.
Right.
Did you feel that your body was because sometimes people are a little too tall to run the track indoors.
But myself, actually,
I know.
Super built. I'm actually built for indoor because I'm shorter. Only 5'9".
Yep.
But so when I'm running in there, and you also have to develop a certain way of running, you have to be able to run fast on those bends. And so when you're on those straightaways, you just feel like you're striding, but then you just change your stride. And that's something I learned when I was running in college, and I kept doing that and perfecting it every time when I ran as a professional, whenever I had any indoor races. But I didn't know that I would able to win eight Wanamaker miles, to be honest. I thought these guys were going to take at some point. But I ran against the best athletes.
Yeah.
And I was able to beat them every time, except maybe two times.
Right. Well, and Eamon was built that way, too. Eamon was a shorter guy.
Exactly.
A little more powerful.
Yeah, he's like my height.
Yes, yes. So then the other thing that was sitting out there, Carlsbad 5000, the American record had sat with Mark Davis forever, and he set that number years ago. And then last year you got that.
Yes.
Yeah, he had his.
I went 13:19 on that one, and his record was 13:23.
Yep. And
go ahead.
I was going to say, and he set that back in '96. I was surprised it lasted so long.
It lasted for a long time.
Yes.
And the guy, looking at that time, 13:23. In 96, that was moving. That was a time that he ran awesome.
Yes.
That was a tough time.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have tried it, and they have missed it, And so I went in there last year thinking, let me give it a try. Maybe I can win this. And by winning it, I can, come close to the time. We would actually break that 13:23. And I ran 13:19.
And the cool part was you took second overall.
Yes.
And, did you feel like that, or do you feel now that, even though I'm 40 years old, there's no reason I can't win this race?
In fact, I was talking to my training partners who are way younger than me.
Yeah.
They're coming to run with me.
Yes. Lawi
Lalang is coming to run with me. Sam Jalanga is coming to run with me. And I was telling these young guys, let's go for it, and hopefully we chase each other. We just like compete against each other. Now I'm looking at Lawi. I don't want you to beat me. Sam, I'm not going to beat you. You guys are young, but you know what? I'm 40. I'm going to challenge you guys. So every time we do that, even training, I tell them, you know, you guys, I'm going to challenge you. Wait a second. You're going to see it. And so we keep challenging each other, which is really nice. And so the guys are excited to come. I'm excited to come and see what we can do again, if we can run under 15:23 again.
What now? The course is different this year. It should be faster with multiple loops up on top, and not running the, you know, there used to be a long downhill and uphill. With Carlsbad being, yep, you know, there's track racing and then there's road racing, and this is sort of in between because it's a road, but you know, with the multiple loops this time, what is it about Carlsbad that you like?
You know, what I liked about Carlsbad is the fact that, first of all, the course is so scenic. Even though you're running, you don't even think about, you know, how beautiful this area is.
Yeah.
But it offers people to watch this event. You know, as we just go down, they watch us going down, they watch us coming and pass through that. I think there's a military academy there when we make a turn to come home and finish. And so it is really spectator-friendly. But even though it was spectator-friendly and a fast course, now now they have decided to put these two loops. We are no longer going to go way down on that boulevard. I don't know what they call it.
Yeah, it's on the coast road.
Yeah, so then we are making two loops, which is going to be fantastic now because you will see us two times, not just once like before. So, and we will come back and finish at the same spot. So this is going to be really nice, spectator-friendly, and people will be able to see us running. Well, my only concern about that is, you know, well, with the two turns that is added, will that really slow us down by maybe about 2 seconds every turn?
Right. Yeah, could.
So, because the more turns you have, it doesn't matter how fast the course is, you're going to have that challenge of you have to slow down to make a turn. And then over there, you have to slow down to make a turn. So basically, if I was to actually calculate, if we are going to lose even 1 second, we are losing. If we are at the pace of 13:20, we might actually lose 4 seconds, so we might be at 13:24. See, that is a little bit that we have to see, you know, and also we are going to be showing the competitor group that, you know what, this was a good thing because, you know, look at the times. We took all these times, or, well, it was fast, but we did not hit the times because maybe because of these turns, even though we were going as fast as before.
Yeah, I mean, the main thing is it'll be better for the crowds, better for television. It'll be really exciting to keep everything closer together.
Absolutely. And I'm excited. You know, it's going to be really nice. And, you know, these people at the competitor group, they do an amazing job.
They do.
Let me tell you. You're in there. First of all, when we get in, we get some, I mean, like, you're welcomed. It's like you're wanted. You're part of the most important group that is being invited, that have been invited to come and compete in that prestigious meet. And for me, money aside or anything else, I like to feel that I'm wanted. And you know what? That makes me want to come and do the best, to come and show people that are lining up on that street that, you know what, running is always fun. It doesn't matter what level, but you are here to watch us run the Carlsbad 5K, and we're going to give you guys the best show. And that's what we come there to do.
So I was looking through your you know, PRs over the years, and I see in 2013 that you ran 102.33 for the New York Half Marathon. And I'm going, what the heck is Bernard Lagan doing running a half marathon? And is he thinking of going to the marathon? Because I think one of the reasons you've been so successful is you really haven't strayed from the 1,500 and 5,000. You haven't, you know, I think you've run an occasional 10K, but really you've focused on speed. And when I saw the half marathon, I thought, well, 102.33 for first time out is pretty darn impressive. And is that something down the line that you're thinking of running a marathon?
I would love to run a marathon, but I've always said to myself, if the marathon is, I mean, half marathon, when I ran that 62, I felt like it was a stretch. But at the same time, the conditions were not conducive for me as a person. It was way too cold for me coming from Arizona. And I had not done really the perfect training for the half marathon. So I've been telling my friends, you know, I wonder if, let's say, we train for this.
Yes.
And then we go in and run with the specific training that you have done for this marathon.
Yeah.
I don't know how is that going to turn out. And I said, I think we're going to do much better than I've done before. And so that's the stuff that makes me excited about it, even though it was hard. But I believe also I can do another half marathon. But then the marathon itself might be a little...
That's a little
tricky.
Too long. Yeah.
It's a bit too long. Coming from a miler to, like, trying to... Because right now, Bob, if you run 206,
yeah,
it might not earn you a lot of money.
It's true. It's true. 206 is sort of pedestrian nowadays. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Nowadays, you know, you've got to be running way faster than that. Those stuff, because at the end of the year, when they rank these marathoners, you see 204, 205, many of them.
I know. It's crazy. Yep. It is crazy. So, Bernard, we will see you next week at the Carlsbad 5000. And what's the rest of your season going to be? And for the Olympics, will it be the 5000, 1500, both?
It's going to be the 5000 only for the Olympics.
Okay.
And also we also have World Championships in Beijing in August. So I'll be also representing the United States in the 5000. But that's not confirmed yet, because I still have to go to the trials and try to qualify, which I'm sure with Coach Lee's training and my training partners, you know, helping each other here in training, I should be able to make the team to Beijing.
And then, of course,
that would be a nice, you know, way of looking at 2016, that I was able to make it to Beijing. To Beijing this year. So next year I'll make it to Rio.
Rio would be your fifth Olympics. I don't know how many people have gone to five Olympics, but I don't think there's that many.
Not that many, but you know, it's a blessing to be able to do that.
Bernard, thank you so much for taking so much time. It's always, always a pleasure. You're such a class act. I always enjoy talking to you.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you for having me.
Bernard Legat has been our guest. Again, we're brought to you by the very best in women's activewear, Core Sports, Head Sweats, Function Smart Physical Therapy with Gino Cinco. And, of course, check out any of our interviews on Babbittville Radio on iTunes. Hold on, everyone. We will be right back.